Welcome to the Conversations That Matter podcast. My name is John Harris. We got a guest with us today. We got Alan Atchison. Alan, thank you for joining me and being willing to discuss the Southern Baptist Convention and whatever else we get into.
Well, I appreciate you having me, and there is certainly a lot to talk about.
Yeah, well, you haven't been on the show before. We've talked a few times more recently, but I've been familiar with your blog since, I think it was like right after Resolution 9 or right before Resolution 9. We don't even call it the SBC convention anymore. We just call it Resolution 9 from 2019. But before that, I think you were blogging about like sports and other things. And somehow now you're like the go-to guy for like, what's the latest in the SBC. So, I think your numbers are like, they exceed the other more progressive like SBC voices and some of these other blogs that no one reads. Here's the thing. I wanted to find out, first of all, how did you get into this? Because I don't even know this story.
Well, I guess it was about 2015, certainly by 2016, I started detecting there's something wrong with what Russell Moore is saying. So I started writing about this. The more I researched, the more I thought, no, there's significant issues with Russell Moore. And you could start seeing some of the connections, where you started seeing, well, he's advocating policies that are not necessarily conservative. And so I started writing about that, and I got a lot of reaction. And the more pushback you would get from some of the more leftist woke folks, that as we would know them now, I just got more committed to doing it. They just want to silence any dissent. And so instead of engaging a dialogue, which could have taken place back 2015, 2016, 2017, they just wanted everybody to be quiet. Well, that doesn't work with me. That tends to make me want to talk more. So I just kept doing it. And certainly I think that by the 2019 convention, that was that turning point with Resolution 9, because finally it validated everything that a lot of us had been saying, that critical race theory and social justice had taken over the Southern Baptist Convention.
Yeah. Well, your website is Capstone Report. People can go check out your articles. You come out sometimes with like five a day. Like, you're really on top of what's going on. I don't know how you do it with, just a family and I don't know, everything else, but you're quick. That's the other thing I've noticed. You're quick and you get the information out there. So I just want to say thank you from me and from others who have benefited from that. You are doing a service. And I think at this past convention, especially in the Southern Baptist world, your influence meant something. It really did. And so I want to talk about where the SBC is at now and kind of, because like this, we could literally sit here for like 3 hours probably talking about this. I don't want to do that. But like, kind of just give me like the high points. Like, where's the SBC at right now? And I know you're conservative. You're probably discouraged by what just happened. What do you think now, though, that Ed Litton's being kind of pursued by people that normally wouldn't say anything, but now all of a sudden, and I know all the woke stuff didn't seem to phase him, but all of a sudden plagiarism is now like taking him out, kind of, for lack of a better term. What do you think? What's going on?
Well, I think we're in a stage five dumpster fire in the Southern Baptist Convention. It is a total disaster, and it's become this total disaster because it's the 11th commandment has been the controlling thing. So the leadership had decided to go down this woke path and they did not allow dissent. What happened is it platformed a lot of people, apparently like Ed Litton, who is willing to repeat anything that finds approval with other Southern Baptist entity heads. And so, that's how we got, I think, Ed Litton. He said the things that people wanted to hear. He was the kind of grandfatherly figure that could be managed. So I think that's where we are right now. And unfortunately, a lot of that was just a veneer. It was a facade that he covered up lack of theological depth and some other serious faults. And I think that's what people are alarmed about. It's the hypocrisy is at this point from Ed Litton and his enablers just too clear. When there's ambiguity there and they can say, well, we're just applying critical race theory, we're not teaching it or something along those lines, people can make excuses. But when you see a 25-minute long video like dropped last night from some anonymous YouTube user, it just hits you in the face. He's copying word for word. He's delivering like an actor.
How many are we up to now?
That's a good question. I think maybe six sermons that have been documented. I think there's six, most in Romans, and then the one that we wrote about from Acts that Greer preached in 2013 and Litton preached in 2015. That to me was, that was an eye-opening thing, because at first it was limited to the Roman series, and that was the narrative that they were pushing. But we know it's far more extensive than that. The question really I think everyone's asking is, who else did Litton copy from? And we don't have an answer to that yet. I think it's going to be harder because they made a lot of stuff disappear, which is constantly, I mean, you want to talk about honest conduct, let's cover up the evidence. That probably speaks more about the lack of character and virtue amongst the Litton and his supporters than anything else. Instead of just owning up to something, they deleted or tried to hide all the evidence.
How many lies have been documented in trying to hide evidence or get pressure off them from this whole plagiarism controversy? Because I do know that he had, you know, said one thing on like I can't even keep track. There's been so many mainstream media stories. It was a mainstream media story. They said one thing, and then he said something else different to someone else. So how many lies are we talking about?
Well, that's a good question, and I haven't counted them up. But yeah, he told the Washington Times, "Well, the sermons were removed for web space issues. We're migrating to a new web serving environment." And previously to that, just like the day before, Baptist Press had run a statement from the Redemption Church elders saying they took them down because they didn't want anybody going through them taking things to malign their pastor. So those things don't mesh. They're not accurately, or they don't work together. Either you took them down for renovation for your website, or you took them down to cover up the evidence and not so he wouldn't look bad. So then he goes on SBC This Week and he compounds the lie because he tells us, no, both of those things are true.
Hold on. They were renovating the website, so he had to take sermons down from YouTube.
Again, it's one of those things that doesn't make sense. And also,
not buying it.
I don't either. But even if they were going through this type of transition, which probably, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt, maybe they are, but that's a lie of omission. When you tell the Washington Times, no, these things came down because we're going through a website renovation, but the other people on staff told the truth, probably to Baptist Press, he's just being so Clintonian at this moment.
Okay, I just remembered something. When Southeastern did this, do you remember, this was what, 2 years ago now, when they took out a bunch of Kingdom Diversity stuff, like 90% of Kingdom Diversity stuff was scrubbed. And there's still some videos out there and stuff of some of the crazy things that were going on there. But that was the same reasoning that was used. Was, oh, well, that was a website renovation that we're doing right now. But the interesting thing was they didn't take down everything. Some of the articles were still there. It's like 90% were gone. And I think maybe they did do a website renovation, but it was awfully convenient at the very moment they're being challenged and they're being exposed, all of a sudden, website renovation. I see the same thing happening again. And this is what's leading some people who have just been paying attention over the last few years to conclude these guys are all corrupt. This is just a corrupt enterprise. You get the sense people think that about the upper echelons of the SBC?
I get that sense. And they aren't doing anything to discourage that view. Look at the conduct, whether it's the North American Mission Board or are a couple of seminary professors and presidents excusing blatant plagiarism. I mean, it's clear what, I think Bart Barber had a video that came out that he was saying, you know, I don't agree with what Litton said, but I don't want CBN getting the vice president to become president because I don't like those guys. It's a total, like, ends justify the means argument that he was making, but he was saying out loud how they really feel. They want power and they're not going to share it with anyone. And that's, so when people say it's corrupt, it's about money, it's about power, well, good evidence there.
Yeah, I think, and I don't think I saw that video, but just for people who don't understand the situation, you have Ed Litton, who's kind of a social justice minded, more progressive candidate who won in Nashville, the SBC presidency. And the vice president, though, what's his name again?
Lee Brand, I think.
Lee Brand, right, Lee Brand. I've never met him or talked to him, but I understand he's conservative. He was a conservative Baptist Network guy. If Ed Litton vacates or resigns, whatever, Lee Brand takes that position. And I know I had said on a video about a week ago, this is the moment. Like, I made this video. I said, look, here's 8 reasons to leave the SBC. But I wasn't expecting that literally right after the election, all of a sudden there's this huge controversy that people are even willing to chime in on who aren't willing to chime in on social justice. And the guns are all pointed at the SBC president, and not just him, but people who would defend him. Danny Akin is one of those guys. I know the provost, Keith Whitfield at Southeastern, defended him. I remember there was like maybe 6 people, upper echelon SBC guys. So this is certainly a turn of events that I was not expecting. And there's only one person I can think of, maybe you know of more, who could be considered an SBC elite. And with the exception of maybe Rod Martin, but like actually like works for an entity. And that's Jason Allen, who actually opposed the plagiarism. What do you think about that? What do you make of that, that Jason Allen is breaking ranks? That does not happen often.
I think what we have to understand now about the SBC elites, there's a fracture in the hierarchy. Or the oligarchy. It's really an oligarchy that's kind of in control of things. And I think what you're seeing here is a fracture. Al Mohler has been totally silent. Akin supported Litton. Greenway retweeted a thing in support of Litton. So we know where they stand. But Dr. Allen made a very brave statement saying, re-preaching sermons, particularly unattributed, is wrong. And of course, you notice there's immediate blowback from the woke wing of the SBC. The Hillary Clinton voting Dwight McKissick attacked Dr. Allen for that very simple, and a few weeks ago, that would have been uncontroversial statement that you don't preach other people's sermons without proper attribution. So I think it does show there's a fracture going on, because some people just can't, they just are going to refuse to endorse such blatant hypocrisy. Because we know in our colleges and seminaries, people would be expelled for what Ed Litton did.
They should be, at least.
Or at least they would be disciplined. They would not get away without any type of penalty. Why should Ed Litton be different? Because he's a pastor and because he's woke, or are we just going to give him a get out of jail free card, so to speak?
Yeah.
So there has to be a consequence here.
Okay. Let me ask you this. There's been, so I don't remember who it was. I don't even know if we know who it was who first kind of discovered, hey, Ed Litton is taking from J.D. Greer, and J.D. Greer was taking from Tim Keller. And it was this whole like God whispers about sexual, the Bible whispers about sexual immorality. And I think the phrase that they took was that heterosexuality doesn't get you to heaven, or something like that. Homosexuality doesn't keep you from heaven, and heterosexuality doesn't get you to heaven. And so someone just made that connection, right? They said, hey, there's a similarity between these sermons. That led into, and that was like 2 weeks ago, hey, hold on, Ed Litton copied this whole sermon, which led into, wait a minute, he copied like major portions of this whole series by J.D. Greer, which led into, it wasn't just this series by J.D. Greer, he copied another sermon by J.D. Greer, unrelated, which has now led into, and this is the thing I want to ask you about, a sermon preparation service that apparently Matt Chandler and J.D. Greer both use and commend. What can you tell us about this?
It's a very new development that has kind of a Patheos blog a few days ago found in the Wayback Machine on the Internet Archive, J.D. Greer endorsing Docent, which provides some sort of illustration help, historical help, deep research to kind of help make sermons better, sort of to add vivid illustrations or more concrete historical examples. Apparently, Matt Chandler has also utilized the service. And in fact, Reformation Charlotte had tweeted out a video an hour or two ago before our interview showing Matt Chandler endorsing it and explaining he may not understand the sociological issues or some other historical things going on, but that research service allows him to focus on the exegetical work. So it's a very disturbing, I think, revelation that a lot of these megachurch pastors like Greer and Chandler have in the past, at least, and perhaps still currently, we don't know. I think they require NDAs or something like that to utilize their service. But we really don't know if they're still using it or not. And I think it raises a lot of questions about the messaging that Southern Baptists are hearing. Is this really an exploration of God's word, or is this something that we don't know who is putting out and sending out to all of these pastors?
You know, Alan, when I was in seminary at Southeastern years ago, I remember in preaching class, one of the questions that was asked from our professor was, what pastors do you like? Who do you like? And we were encouraged to copy them. If you're purposely trying to copy someone's style, to dress like them, to talk like them, to use their mannerisms, you're not yourself. There's something artificial about that. I saw that years ago in the incubation for Southern Baptist pastors, right? A seminary. And this was what was going on at that time. Find a personality, find a guy you like, and you know, act like him, kind of thing. And so I think we can recognize there is an element of discipleship where you're going to become like the one who's tutoring you. But then there's also a fakeness that people have when they copy every element that they can of someone in the most unnatural way, because they think that's the only way to be recognized or accepted, etc. It's not the Holy Spirit in the text of Scripture doing the hard work, diving into the text, being a Berean, being a faithful workman who should not be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. But instead, I'm of Apollo, I'm of, you know, whoever, I'm of Greer in Litton's case, and then preaching their whole sermons without doing the work yourself. There's a difference there, and it's wrong to your flock to do that. It's wrong to those who are streaming online now that as he's the Southern Baptist Convention president. It's wrong to those who he leads in the Southern Baptist Convention for him to continue to do this, which he probably won't now that he's been kind of caught with his hand in the cookie jar. But there's a culture of that. And that's all I want to get across, is there's a culture that kind of can lend itself to that potentially in the SBC. And I wonder whether or not we're going to see a lot more examples of this kind of thing coming forward, of people stealing sermons. What can you tell me about the prospects for conservatives with this controversy? I mean, we were hopeless, right? Southern Baptist conservatives. Now, all of a sudden, there's this glimmer of hope. Will Ed Litton step down as a result of this? Will Lee Brand take over? Will Al Mohler somehow figure out a way to benefit himself in this? What's going to happen?
We don't know yet. But I do think it illustrates something that conservatives are have to stay involved in some way, because you never know what's going to happen tomorrow. Because after the election, who would have thought we would be here just a couple of weeks later talking about, will Ed Litton resign? But here we are, and he should resign. He has disgraced himself. He has disgraced his church, and he's disgraced the Southern Baptist Convention. An honorable man would step down. He's not doing that. He's clinging to power, which says a lot more about his character and the character of the people who funded and promoted his campaign. They are committed to, I guess, staying the course. So in that sense, he may stay in there. But he will not. I can make this prediction. I don't think he'll be reelected in Anaheim. I think he will not even be renominated if he lasts that long. And I just don't know. I mean, every day we're finding out something new. And who knows how far back this goes. At some point, it will become too much, and it will become a distraction, and it will begin to hit the bottom line. And when it hits the bottom line of the SBC, that's when people really start caring.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm as optimistic as you are. I could be wrong. I thought that there was going to be a lot more angry conservatives at the last convention that would kind of overturn things potentially. But there is that the swamp is deep. And so we'll see, I guess, what happens if he does not resign, if he just refuses and the wagons are circled and he's entrenched as the leader. How should churches think about that? Because in my mind, that's like we're really on the knife's edge right now. If he resigns, Lee Brand takes over, maybe there's an opportunity there. If he doesn't resign and the swamp just gets, you know, even more ingrained that this is how we do things in the SBC, that will prove to you that there are not, there really aren't men of character at the top levels. What is Jason Allen, the only guy who's really spoken up about this? I mean, if no one else comes forward, what do you make of the SBC? Do you put a gravestone on it?
Well, if there is not a decided push amongst a broad grouping of Southern Baptists, yeah, you can just go ahead and start engraving the tombstone. But I think there will be blatant lying, blatant stealing. It's a bridge too far. People are not going to be able to tolerate that and explain that to their churches. Because for the first time, this is a thing I think that should give us all hope. People are standing up to the woke leadership, wherever they are, whether it's at McLean Bible Church, where David Platt is in the fight of his life, because people don't like the woke social justice heresy that they're getting. The Southern Baptist Convention was deeply divided. Again, the entrenched bureaucracy was able to mobilize their vote and get people to turn out. That may not always be the case, particularly after we find out a lot of things in this coming year. And this is where conservatives have some hope. What's next in the Linton scandal? What happens when the Will McRaney case gets to depositions? Because we all know when they're... The corruption in the Southern Baptist Convention, the bad conduct, mostly centers around the North American Mission Board. So who knows what will come out when they get to depositions. And we're getting closer to that day by day. After McRaney's win at the Supreme Court, there was a new story. It's been so busy, I haven't even been able to come out and write about it, but there was a new story that came out regarding the other bad conduct by Zell against another state executive. So there's a lot here. People are talking. We may be in a scandal that is so big that it does shake the foundations of the Southern Baptist Convention. But that may be the hand of God. It may be God putting some judgment down, disciplining the church for allowing such bad behavior through its leadership, both locally and in the denominational hierarchy.
Well, tell us a little bit about, you mentioned David Platt, he's in the fight of his life, you said. So you have Litton, you have David Platt, I guess J.D. Greer, I don't know who else, but who right now, what kind of, I don't know, scandals for lack of a better term, but just what situations are going on that could really bring down some of these SBC elites that you're referring to?
Well, I think one thing that needs to be that's happening kind of they're all these scandals are happening concurrently. There's a big division at McLean Bible Church in Virginia. It was a very large church. David Platt's social justice stuff is 40% drop in attendance. People are angry. This, I think, provides a model for concerned people in their local churches. Is if they want to start fighting against their woke pastor, these guys in Virginia are showing the way. I'm not going to go ahead and say it's completely like a shot heard around the country in terms of these churches, but it's something that woke leadership should start to fear. So I think as that develops, I mean, I'm working on an article now. What David Platt, he lied multiple times in his sermon Sunday. So I'm working on an article going through that. This guy is motivated by power and wants to cling to it. It's the same things motivating Ed Litton. It's the same things motivating most of these seminary presidents and other SBC elites. And so I think chipping away in multiple, like, think of it in terms, if you want to think of it like a battle or war, it's multiple theaters of operations. There's local churches, there's the denominational stuff, and we have to chip away at all of it. And the great thing is that it's not a movement of one individual led. It's a grassroots movement throughout evangelical churches, whether they're Southern Baptists or not. And that's one of the funniest things coming out of the situation in McLean. They are showing, as a Southern Baptist church, they gave money to the cooperative program. But yet they said they're not, David Platt said, they're not associated with the Southern Baptist Convention. Yet they planted 43 Southern Baptist churches through their church planting network in partnership with the North American Mission Board. There's a lot of money, and there's a lot of it's just odd that the way that these churches and these elites are doing things. And I think that's what should give everyone hope. It's being revealed. These people are finally being held accountable. And who knows where it's going to end up tomorrow.
Wow. Well, something to pray for sure. That the eyes of people would be further opened, that God would grant conviction, that those who are pharisaical or just opportunists would be thoroughly exposed and leave, vacate the denomination. It's just, I wasn't expecting this. I know you weren't, I'm sure most people probably weren't, but you know, it's out there. It's there's movement going on that was, we were not expecting. So, let's just keep this in prayer, for people who, appreciate what you do and getting this information to people like, myself and others who are interested in it. Where can they go to support your work? Or, I mean, I know that Capstone, is there like a donate tab there or?
There's not. Maybe I should look into putting something up. I hear that there's a lot of good options out there in that, but no, we're just pretty much, have been ad supported. It's just something that we've,
so go click on an ad.
No, not that will get me in trouble with Google. I encourage people for that. No. But at some point we may consider doing it because there are just so many stories to tell. Having been in newspaper publishing and in print publication most of my adult life, I'm stunned by how much news is here right now. There are too many things to tell, and every day there's like five or six more things, and you just go down that list. And at some point you need to hire a staff to get people, to get all of the stuff covered. And that's just how much is going on. And I think there's a great interest out there amongst the public about this. Finally, they're learning. And I think most people, even though in our groups online that were educated about critical race theory and the like, I think a lot of people who went to Nashville were just, they didn't know. They thought Ed Litton was a nice guy. Well, that was an act, we find out. He's really apparently not. It certainly is not qualified to be a pastor or the SBC president. So I think that's one of the things that all of us, the things that we do, what you do, what so many other websites and podcasts do, is educating people. Because that's the only way we're going to make a difference in the SBC or in evangelical churches in general.
Well, Alan, I appreciate your time. I know you got a lot going on, and you got to write an article, it sounds like, about this Ezel situation. But God bless you, and we'll keep our eyes on things and maybe have you back on when things change. So thank you.
Well, I appreciate it, enjoyed it, and look forward to it. Take care.
All right. God bless. Bye now.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.